Welcome to the Gridiron Icon Podcast, where we tackle all things American football. Each week, we huddle with players, coaches, and fans at every level of the game to capture all the sights, sounds, and experiences of the gridiron. And now, fresh off the end of the bench, here's your host, Stacey Bauman.
All right, welcome into this week at Gridiron Icon, and I am pumped. I am super excited to have this guy with us this week. You might recognize him just by seeing his face if you're following along on YouTube, if you're listening on the podcast. I have wide receiver, NFL legend, great Brandon Lloyd. And as we know, or may not know, we're going to dig into this a little bit this week, all Big Ten wide receiver, fourth round pick of the San Francisco 49ers. We don't hold that against you, us Rams fans. A second team all pro, a pro bowler, and might I add, had a wide receiver season for the ages in 2010. It's ridiculous. I went back and watched the highlights prepping to spend time with you. Brandon Lloyd, welcome in, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Stacey.
It's great to see you. I got to tell you, man, you look great. Sometimes the post-career stuff, people are a little rough and they're tired. They just want to get away from it. You look really healthy and just like you're enjoying life.
Well, thank you. Yes, you know, I made some dietary changes about 2 years ago, and it's been really helpful. You know, the switching to a mostly plant-based diet.
Wow.
I maintained my exercise regimen, and most of this was spurred by COVID-19, you know, and being in the house and quarantining. You know, I came up with a mantra for health, and part of that was, you know, I knew that I needed to take my medicine, and my medicine is vigorous exercise because it knocks the edge off. And so, you know, once I canceled my gym memberships, I bought some exercise equipment and put it in the house. You know, I got rid of the wine racks in the basement, and I put in exercise equipment, and that was part of my COVID-19 quarantine opportunity to come out of the quarantine in better condition than I went into it. So I had a whole mindset around going into that, and part of that was going back and getting my MBA. I am very fulfilled and happy, and you know, getting and still continuing to do philanthropic work, which, you know, I'm sure we'll get to later, but
definitely,
you know, that's all part of my happiness right now.
Yeah, man, I got to tell you, at the risk of sounding like a weird guy, you got a glow about you. You just look like you're in a really good space. And sometimes we'll talk with people that are coming through some adversity, but you look like you're booming, man. That's inspiring. I tell you what, COVID-19 has changed everybody's life, and it sounds like you got some perspective. You know, and of course, you're only retired from the NFL about six, seven years now. You're really getting into the prime of your life, and you're taking care of yourself. Good stuff, man. Well, I want to talk. I didn't realize about the NBA, so I want to talk about that because I'm guessing mom is very proud of you on that front, mom and dad. But I'll tell you, and I teased this a little bit in our pre-show visit, which was seconds long. I really am fascinated by you as a person because you're one of those people. Oftentimes, we'll get, you know, an athlete on here that's just, they never have it easy. And I think that's part of what this podcast is about. But you're someone that's overcome a lot of adversity at each stage of your life as a young man. And I think that's inspiring for people to hear how and why and where you fell and skinned your knee and where you made a mistake and got up and changed it. And so I've really been impressed with you. And as I admitted, in my mind, Brandon Lloyd is literally one of the top five wide receivers for circus catches I have ever seen, man. I'll tell you, put yourself, Chris Carter. I'm a little older than you, so the John Jeffersons, the Preston Dennards of the Rams, if you know Preston, wonderful man, the way you guys would lay out for a ball. But we're going to go beyond that. We're going to learn a little bit about you. So I want to go back to the beginning with you, Brandon. And then we'll talk about kind of your journey up to this point, which is far from done. But how did you, kind of starting with the football, how did you start with football? Did you fall in love with that sport? Was that one of your first loves, or was there other sports that you had equal love for?
Well, football was my first love. Well, first, thank you again for those kind words.
I mean it.
But football was my first love. You know, I have told a story in the past about being in kindergarten and when the other students were picking professions, when the teacher would prompt us on, what do you want to be when you grow up? The other students would pick doctor, lawyer, teacher, fireman, policeman, and I'd always pick professional athlete.
I love it.
And I picked it so much. One time I got sent to the principal's office. She told me, that's unrealistic. You need to go to the principal's office if you don't pick another one. I wouldn't pick another profession. Send me to the principal's office. So I'm sitting in the principal's office. I'm crying. I'm a wreck. And the principal, Mr. Barnhart, says to me, you know what? You can be a professional athlete. And you will. And he gave me the talk about keeping my nose clean, staying out of trouble, and getting good grades in school, and sent me back to the classroom. And so, you know, I was still a very rambunctious little kid. And my dad was a Golden Glove boxer. And so he gave me two options. He said, you need to box or you need to play football, but you need to get this energy out. And so in the third grade, I entered into flag football and it was just immediately, you know, I was in love with it. You know, the first time I touched the ball in a flag football game on the kickoff, I ran it back for a touchdown. And it was just like, you know, I was the smallest kid out there, you know, and it was just the excitement that I saw that came over the team, the parents and spectators that were watching, and just the emotion that came over me of having the talent to do something like that. You know, that's what made me fall in love with the game.
I love it. You didn't even know it was in you until you were out there running around. That's incredible, man. What a tidbit about your dad being a boxer. I got to tell you, my brain immediately went to, this explains some of Brandon's hands and some of the handwork. I mean, did he train you?
Well, it's not in the way you think. Think about this.
Oh, interesting.
That's a funny story. So, you know, his knuckles were all calloused over from the bags. And so, you know, he couldn't stretch his hands out. So when he'd play catch with me, I mean, the ball would come out wobbly all over the place. I mean, it'd be too high, too low, too far. And so I was being in the backyard making spectacular catches. And it was almost like, I was like, man, my dad throws like a woman. You're right.
Oh, but, no.
You know, but I'm still playing with him and he's still playing with me. But it was only until I got older where I'm kind of like, maybe he was doing that on purpose.
That is phenomenal. You're right. I wouldn't have guessed that. That's incredible. Listen, for anybody listening, and anybody who's going to listen is probably a fan, but might be stumbling on your career for the first time, go watch this man's catches. That's incredible because the stuff you did along the sidelines for several teams was just stupid, man. Mm-hmm. And keeping the toe tap in. So incredible nugget right there. Your dad was a boxer. And that's how you developed your hands. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Did you play any other sports? I've seen now your Twitter has a baseball shot. So I'm guessing you were a multi-sport guy.
Yes. Like I said, I was so small and in the Little League flag football team. When we got to tackle football, I was too little.
Wow.
And, you know, and I was always, you know, and so my dad was like, man, you're going to get creamed out there. So you need to pick another sport. So I picked up baseball for 2 years and in the fifth and sixth grade. And then in the seventh grade, I entered back into football.
Oh, so okay.
I played baseball and football through seventh and eighth grade. And then that's when I switched to track and field when I got to be a freshman in high school.
Wow. So so three sport athlete as a kid eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Wow,
mm-hmm.
Man. Were you known as I never considered you a burner when you were in the NFL, but were you a burner? Like these guys now are running, they're so small, but they're running 4.2s and 4.1s. They had a guy at the combine this year. Were you in the four?
DK Metcalf, even the big fella.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Reason. 4.2s.
He's nuts. Who was it he chased down on that interception? Like chased him the length. I was like, that man's a defensive end. What's going on?
Yeah, but I even have looked him up and seen him running track and field in the qualifying meets and I mean, it's awesome. Like that's, you know, that's what brings me joy about football, is to see the athletes extending themselves into other sports and actually showing the versatility. Yeah. I may be biased, but I think football athletes are the best athletes on the planet, especially when you start talking about the size of the offensive linemen and compared to what they can do, you know, going in reverse, and then the defensive linemen, the size and the quickness. But what was our question?
I was just intrigued by how you've leveraged. As a burner.
I was never extremely fast. I was explosive, and
right.
and that's what translated into speed on the football field. When I was in high school, I was a 13.7, 110 high hurdler. I was a 25.2 long jumper, and I high jumped 7'3". So I was explosive. I was freakishly athletic, and that's what translated to speed. But, you know, open 100, you know, I wasn't that fast, or wow. 40, you know, I was probably a 4.4 or 4.5 runner consistently. I wasn't a true burner.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, and it's incredible to me that guys like you, they seem, and correct me if I'm wrong, they seem like they develop other instinctual pieces to their game. Like, you were very sudden. I, you know, watching some of your highlights, even with the Rams and the Patriots, you're very sudden. You had a run where you dodged like 8 guys on your way to the end zone. And there's guys like that. I put you in the same kind of class, I guess, as today, like a Cooper Kupp and like an Anquan Boldin. You guys had like this well-rounded game. You weren't just, and it's funny, the guys that seem to be really just burners don't seem to always make it. You know, they seem to struggle with some of that.
Right. Which is, you know, what we're keeping an eye on for Tyreek Hill and Miami. You know,
we're keeping
an eye on that for, is it going to translate to another team with someone with a dramatically less arm than Patrick Mahomes? So it really matters. Just being fast. That was something that we always went through as football players, because the football coach would always say, you know, we need more fast guys. We need more speed. So they bring out the track and field guys to try to light a fire under our ass. Good luck with these guys. You know, they're going to get open, but are they going to catch the ball? Right.
Yeah.
If they get open. If they catch the ball, you know, are they going to run with it? You know, these guys are not used to contact like that. So we were always being threatened with speed and in the football rooms.
It's just crazy because it so rarely works out. I mean, it really. When I was a kid,
the LA Raiders, when they brought Galt and James Jett, I mean that kind of worked. Solid.
Galt was they were pretty good. But even when I was a kid, they had, and you're younger than me, obviously. But when I was a kid, we had like Ron Brown of the Rams, who was in the Olympics, and also Ronaldo Nehemiah was a hurdler for the Niner. But yeah, it's funny. As you begin to look at the league, you see guys like a Brandon Lloyd, like a Cooper Kupp, like a Adam Thielen, that just have this well-rounded game. And I kind of put you were almost before your time.
Well, in my mind. Here's what's interesting. Here's why I like that comparison. And I appreciate it when you talk about Cooper Kupp.
I really do. Yeah.
We actually have the same coach. So Eric Yarber is who was my first year coach.
Oh, wow. So
that's where I developed a lot of that suddenness. And Stacey, you used the exact word that Coach Yarber drills in: suddenness. Be sudden in and out of the breaks, sudden to the ball. And given the defensive back the sensation, you know, he used these really rich and powerful, colorful words when he was talking about the receiver position and getting open. He's like, man, you got to give the defensive back the sensation that you're stopping, and then be sudden out of that break. So, yeah, that's a neat comparison, because that was the receiver coach that groomed me my first 2 years in the National Football League with the 49ers under Dennis Erickson. And then I also combined that with my experience watching film on Torrey Holt and Isaac Bruce. Because when I came out of the University of Illinois, you know, I had an internship at Fox Sports Net St. Louis.
Oh, wow.
Part of my agreement to go to the University of Illinois, I had Ron Turner promise me I would get an internship at a major journalism outlet.
Wow.
And so I ended up in St. Louis, Fox Sports Net St. Louis, with a media credential at Rams mini camps. And I get whistled over by Torrey Holt and Isaac Bruce. They're at practice and they whistle me over like, you know, come meet us at lunch. And so I sat in there and down in Earth City at lunch with Torrey Holt and Isaac Bruce. And, you know, they're asking me questions about, you know, are you going to go pro? And I'm like, I don't know yet. And there's like, well, you know, when you decide you want to go pro, here's the blueprint. And so they gave me a bunch of workouts. They put in my mind a mindset on going into these games, you know, because that was the time at Illinois I was wearing tape on my fingers. They're like, man, you need to put you some gloves on because all them catches are worth money right now. So,
this is great.
I put gloves on. I came back on campus with a bunch of drills, and the receiving corps was like, we're doing those drills too. And so, you know, those were the two men that I really patterned my game after once I got in the NFL because they were my size. They were super quick. They weren't extremely big and trying to take on unnecessary shots. They got the ball. They got out of bounds. They had hella toe drag game. They were smooth in and out of their cuts. And so that's how I wanted to be as a wide receiver. So I added the components to their game to mine.
You officially just blew my mind. I had no idea. What an awesome story, because those two guys, look, no shame from me. I am a diehard Rams fan, and Ike and Torrey will be in the hall right after him. And I also love Ricky Prohl and Oz Akeem. And I mean, unbelievable, Brandon. I had no idea. That explains so much of your sideline game. Mm-hmm. And there are so many highlights of you doing that stuff. Wow, man, you just blew my mind. Okay, we'll get to the pros, but before we leave, just childhood.
Yes.
What were your other interests? I mean, that's the real theme of this show is mm-hmm. I want to take the helmet off football players because we love them, and we do. We idolize you guys. We love you guys, but there's other stuff to you. What else did you love doing as a kid?
Well, my other interest as a kid was entertaining.
So, you know, so you're natural.
Anytime there was a family reunion and a camcorder came out, I was in front of it, dancing, talking, interviewing people, giving monologues, giving speeches about Martin Luther King. I'll tell you about
that. That's great.
I was the ham when it came to family reunions and dancing. And so I loved entertainment. And so that's why I chose the University of Illinois, because I wanted to be in journalism. I wanted to be in the entertainment space. I was also in choir since elementary school. I sang in the varsity choir in my high school all the way up until my junior year. And the only reason I had to stop doing that is because I went on college visits for football teams. But I loved the music classes. And the entertaining aspect, in middle school, you know, I did the student run journalism program where we report on the news and interview other students. So wow. Those are some of my passions.
You seem like a natural at that stuff. I mean, that we just learned about the Fox affiliation when you were a young guy. And is that something you think about pursuing moving forward outside of what we're going to get into what you're doing? But you seem like a natural at that stuff.
Well, thank you. You know, I became disenchanted with the journalistic process as I became a public figure. And, you know, it was early in my career when Michael Irvin was on Fox, you know, my rookie year. And, you know, and he was saying, Brandon, who is this guy? You know, what's this guy doing? And I was saying to myself, like, wow, you know, an NFL legend who I could have easily been looking up to is using his platform to do this to another receiver, to another young black man trying to make his way in the NFL. And I was like, that was incredibly distasteful in my opinion.
Agree.
And then I went through some back channels through my sports agent, and I got to his management or his representation. And they said, hey, you know what, Brandon, that's just TV. It's TV. It's entertainment. And I said, oh, if that's what entertainment is about, then I don't want any part of it. You know, I think that, you know, I came up in an era of journalism where, you know, there's a lot of integrity. That's what I fell in love with. I fell in love with the nightly news. I fell in love with those feel good pieces, Ahmad Rashad on Inside the
NBA. Oh, yeah.
I really, that was the type of journalist, you know, James Brown on Fox. I really enjoyed that type of journalism. And I realized that, you know, if I wasn't going to be able to get into it in that vein, then I didn't want any part of it.
That might have been a good call. I was a big fan of Irv Cross, too. I loved Irv Cross. God, that's, you know, appreciate you sharing that. I tell you what, that's kind of a gut punch because we're living in five, six, seven, you were still playing. So it was long ago than that. And that's even, it's just gotten worse. It's like, how can we shock people now as opposed to having some integrity and just being natural and nuanced? It's like, man, that changed. And you went to the University of Illinois. You had a real deep interest in some of this stuff, which I hope you get back because there's a place for good stuff. But you go there as a football player. You're a two-time All Big Ten as a sophomore and a junior, but this is coming off a broken femur. And this is where your story intrigues me because oftentimes we'll get guys that just, and it just flowed. It was so easy. Yours was not. And you come, you know, broken leg, you're a young guy, 18, 19 years old, and you're a wide receiver with a broken femur. Right. Take us mentally. How did you deal with that? Like at such a young age in college, you're not even an NFL guy yet. You don't know.
Yeah, I definitely didn't know, you know, because I was, you know, my agreement to my parents was like, I'm using football to get a degree that's going to be meaningful in this world. And, you know, I'm going to stay there for 4 years and get my degree and leave and enter into the real world. Right. And on top of that, I was also a track and field athlete.
That's right. I didn't.
Annoying. And so, you know, I was using my legs and using my body a lot. And then my sophomore year, that summer, my true sophomore year, I fractured my femur. You know, a freak accident, you know, obviously we were partying and drinking and I was by myself.
I didn't even know that. Yeah.
I was with a group of players and we were walking around to another teammate's house, our apartment complex. And somehow I tripped and was like wedged in between this block of concrete and the parking block. It was just like, no idea.
How does this happen? Yeah.
What happened? But sure enough, you know, the guys came back around and I was laying on the ground and, you know, Walter Young and Greg Lewis and another one of the wide receivers, Chad Ruskey and another friend, Muhammad Abdullah, packed me up in the back of that Explorer and drove me to the hospital and called the trainer and Ron Turner and the surgeon came in and, you know, I got that repair over at the hospital that night.
Wow.
And that was what saved my career. You know, as a kid, I didn't know what my future was. I just thought I was a kid in school. I was just going to class, you know, and football. And I wasn't even thinking about the National Football League or what was coming next. And so, you know, I was really at the mercy of some really good people. One, those teammates who were looking out for me. Two, the professionals in the hospital. Al Martindale, the trainer, and Ron Turner, who was making the calls on what to do with me at that time.
Wow.
So, you know, that was all the man.
Yeah,
you know, right. It had nothing to do with me. And so, you know, when it, you know, after that process, when I was up, it was just more like, you know, when am I getting back on the field? And the head athletic trainer still asks me to this day when I returned to Illinois, you know, what really happened?
Yeah. No one believes the story, right? You can't slip in the shower. You can't trip on a curb. It's got to be.
Did you hit by a car? Like what? Like what really, really happened? And so I'm sticking to the story. That is exactly what happened. But he still gives me crap about that.
Like, why would I not tell you? I tell you what, man. I blew out a vertebrae picking up a wet towel. That's not so. Right. Don't feel bad. It's like, it's crazy. So that's incredible, man. So you come back, you're still having success at University of Illinois.
It was a rehabilitation program. You know, it was the, you know, I was you know, Ron was pushing me to come back that that season. It was kind of like, Ron, this is not happening this year. You know, Al Martindale tells me the story. He's like, it is not happening. Ron is trying to get you back out there. It's not happening. And so something really amazing happened to me at the University of Illinois. You know, as a student athlete, you know, you can only take 12 credits and during the football season, because you have to be done with class by the 11 a.m. so that you can make it to the facility to get ready for football.
Oh, right.
So during that time period, I was able to increase my hours as a student. The university allowed me to take journalism classes, which you're unable to take until your junior year. So I started taking true journalism classes. I would get picked up from the late class. They'd take me right to the hospital. I'd do pool workouts. And then they'd drive me to study hall. And then I'd finish my night, get back to my dorm, and like continue on with that routine. You know, I would show up to the games, and, you know, as a regular student, you know, I actually had this whole student life that I was able to live. You know, I was able to go to sorority dances and
wow,
you know, and and be a student on campus, which is a experience I would never have had. And yeah. So it was neat for me to embrace that and have that opportunity to live that student life, but also have that support in my rehabilitation process, have the support in my academic process to keep me engaged in the academics. And then when it was time for me to get back on the field, you know, I felt fulfilled. I was like ready to get back on the field.
Wow.
I got back to spring ball. And after the 2000 football season at the University of Illinois in 2001, and it was just, you know, I was off and running. And you know, that first game back against Cal, I had like 175 yards, my first game back, and, you know, finished that season. You know, we, you know, won the Big Ten, and it was surreal. It was a surreal moment.
You know, it's just unbelievable. I mean, off a busted leg. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And I don't think those of us that just either don't have the skill or the mental acuity to come back from that we just don't realize how tough that is to perform at that level, track and field, which I didn't realize, but also football. It's mind blowing, man. So you're at University of Illinois before we move into the pros, and you decide you're going to come out early. Mm. How did mom and dad deal? Cause you were obviously studious and they obviously wanted you to be, but for some young guy listening, or young woman or guy listening now, how did that go over? I can't imagine that was overly popular.
Did not go over well.
True honesty here.
No, it didn't. It didn't. The way I was looking at it was the talent that was coming back to the university, I wasn't impressed with.
Oh,
I wasn't impressed with the quarterback play. I wasn't impressed with the remaining receiving core after the best receiving core probably in Big Ten history, disassembled. Walter Young, Greg Lewis, Aaron Moorhead, and myself.
Oh, yeah.
After they graduated, then it was just me and a handful of young players that I just didn't have very much confidence in. So it was just no way that I was going to be productive for the team and even my hopes of playing in the National Football League.
Yeah.
And so that was, that was what I was weighing in that decision. In my mind, I was like, I can always go back. Yeah. But coming from a parent with, a kid, having a kid who was saying he was going to be a professional athlete in kindergarten, getting sent to the principal's office. And even through all the success that I had in high school and even getting that scholarship, like I said, I would, and then achieving success in college, it's still unrealistic. They had to be like, come on, for real? Like, again, you think you're really going to pull this off again? You know, because that was the talks I was having with my oldest sister when I was picking colleges. You know, she was saying to me, wow, you know, you have to pick a school with a degree that's going to mean something in this world, because you're probably not going to make it. It's less than 1% of you all that go to college that make it to the pros. And so, you know, that was the whole mindset behind the University of Illinois. And so to be there and to actually it become a reality, you know, in my mind, I was like, I'll go back. But to my parents, they're like, you're not going to do it. You're never going to go back. You're not going to do it. And so it was a moment of defiance in my parents' life, the first one, because I'd always done what I was told and executed on the plan that they put forth. And this was the first time where I was like, no, I'm not doing what you're saying this time. And I'm going to make this decision. So it was incredibly tough. It was really hard. But ultimately they supported me.
Yeah. I mean, I love that. And it's like, there's always this inflection point in a guy's life where you go full Lion King, you know, I'm going to challenge the Lion King, and it's just a natural part of life. But at the time, it's parents could be devastated. You could be upset, but you did it. They supported you. You just started the show saying you went back and got your MBA. Mom. Hi, Mom. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's great stuff, man. But
yeah. And, you know, and I completed my NFL career and I actually enrolled back in school, and I walked, I got my undergraduate. I walked with the class of 2018 at the University of Illinois. And so, and both mom and dad were there in the stands, and my two boys were there, and a couple of my sisters came out, and some really close friends, and first cousin came out with his family. And it was an incredibly moving moment to, you know, to be on the field back in Champaign on the field as a college graduate, you know, and my parents in the stands. And it's a neat moment. My mom told me, she's like, the boys said to us, it's like Back to the Future, you know.
I'm on that's a good point.
My kids are in the stands, and my parents are in the stands, and it's like, it's a real surreal moment. So, yeah, that was really touching.
That's got to be surreal, man. You know, we hear so much negative crap about our athletes. I get sick of it. I mean, I'll be honest with you. Mm-hmm. When you hear this kind of story, and you went through rough times in the NFL, people weren't always nice to you. Like you related a story a few minutes ago, you know, it's, you're just under this microscope. To hear that, to have that moment, that's life stuff right there. And for anybody listening, there you go. There you go. Don't give up on that stuff. That's
never,
that's what you got to do. I love it, man. Well, I've got a million questions, but I'm going to move into the pros, your time at the pros. Cause again, like everything we've learned on your journey and your young life so far, this one had its challenges and you overcame them and shined on the biggest stage. But you played for the Niners, the Redskins, which you've been pretty open about not enjoying, the Bears, Broncos. You played for my Rams. I didn't want you to leave. And then you went to the Patriots and played with Tom Brady, who's probably, you're watching on Sundays going, what's he still doing out there?
Talk about Back to the Future.
That's really Back to the Future. I was watching some of your touchdowns with him, and I thought, Brandon must sit back and go, what? What's he doing? Come on, man. Go golf. So looking at your professional football journey, because it is unique, and it's not at all negative. I think people need to realize in the context of our times with athletes, guys change teams, their business decisions, there are other decisions that go into that. But you got drafted in the fourth round by the 49ers. Tell us about that. Was that like the thrill of a lifetime? You come out early. Oh my God, I just got drafted.
It was not the thrill of a lifetime.
You know? Fascinating. You're not the only one that's told me that.
Yeah, because it was, you know, I was projected to be drafted higher.
Right.
No, the only person happy in the NFL draft is the first overall pick. Everybody else thinks they should be drafted higher. And so I was projected to be a first day pick. The first three rounds went by, no calls, not even inquiry. Wow. And I was incredibly upset about that.
And I'll bet.
And got up the next morning and didn't even turn on the TV and kind of spent some time with some friends home in Blue Springs. And I went to the local track meet, and then I got a call from my sports agent, and he's like, man, you need to get home. The 49ers are going to call you at home and they're going to pick you up later in the fourth round. I was like, all right. So I got home and got received a call from Terry Donahue.
That's right.
And Dennis Erickson. And I had an opportunity to talk to Eric Yarber, and he was just like, man, I can't believe you're still here. We couldn't believe it. And so it felt good that they were excited to have me. It felt good that Dennis Erickson was excited to have me on the team.
Yeah.
And then getting on the team, I had a chip on my shoulder. It was just, you know, there was no time for me to pretend like I had made it when I had put so much on the line, you know, went against my parents' wishes.
Yeah.
I left the university, you know, high and dry, and, you know, I'm betting everything. I am all in on this decision. And so
love it.
I had, you know, I was really focused. What was really helpful was that Greg Knapp, the offensive coordinator, ran the exact same offense as Ron Turner. So I knew the playbook. It was a pro style offense. It was just a few changes, probably a dozen changes of names, but it was the same route concepts.
Wow.
So it took a lot off my plate as a rookie and learning the playbook. That gave me an incredible amount of confidence when I went into training camp and gave me a leg up. And so I was focused on technique and getting open. And so when I got to camp, I was looking at Terrell Owens. I was looking at Ty Streets. I was looking at Cedric Wilson. And I was taking little bits and pieces of every one of those players. I was like, all right, I'm never going to be as big as Terrell Owens, but man, he's got a great work ethic. So, training and diet is all important, because at this time I was still eating fast food. And
you're a kid. Yeah.
He was eating, you know, lean meals and protein and hydrating himself. I mean, it was just impressive. Ty Streets was this incredible technician. At the top of his routes, I mean, just incredibly crafty. And Cedric Wilson was real shifty and sudden in his breaks, and lowered her center of gravity and got in and out of his breaks. And so I just started plucking different skills from each one of these players and then built my own player. And so that's how I really started. And I think that's what gave me the advantage early in my career, was I wasn't focused on the playbook. I wasn't focused on how to play. I was just focused on the technique.
Wow. God, that's such a unique. And I draw comparisons with Cooper Kupp, who also was drafted in third or fourth round. And he came in and he did the same thing. He got to work with guys like Robert Woods and, you know, some of these guys. Just an incredible story. And listen, I want to say at the outset, and it is no slight to anybody, but you never played on any of these teams with a Hall of Fame outside of Tom Brady. With a Hall of Fame quarterback. I mean, often on those Niner teams, there were several quarterbacks. On the Rams teams, I think I watched you, so I know it was Bradford and Feely and Kellen Clemens, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, you had a lot for a wide receiver. You had a lot of different guys throw you balls on these football teams.
Right.
And how did you adjust to that?
Well,
so different.
Well, because I played 1 year without Kirk Kittner, who was a Illini legend quarterback. And when Lon Turner was putting in his replacements when Kurt had graduated, I was complaining. Excuse me. I was saying, well, you know, they're not throwing the ball like this. They're not doing that. They're not playing this. And Ron said, shut up. I can put one of my daughters back there at quarterback. Your job is to catch the ball.
Blunt lesson.
You know, and so that was just my attitude. I shifted my attitude to, man, just make the damn plays. If you're so good, it don't matter who's back there. You know, that's the self-talk that I was giving myself. If you're so good, just make the play. Just make the plays. And so it didn't matter. And so that was my attitude when I was going, you know, got to the NFL. It was like, man, just make the plays.
Yeah. And look, I know you won't say it 'cause you're humble, but I'll say it 'cause I'm a fan and it's my podcast. You made the plays, man. And some of those catches were stupid. Like, and it's not a dig on the quarterbacks, 'cause I love all my ball players, but some of those things that you did in knowing that you knew Ike Bruce, because he went through that early in his career with the Rams as well, where he didn't have established quarterback relationship. So how did that change? I'm kind of all over the board here, because you play. I don't think people realize who Brandon Lloyd has played with. I named a few guys, but there's also Tim Tebow.
Right.
There's Kyle Orton. There's
Starting in San Francisco is Jeff Garcia.
Jeff Garcia.
Marte.
And then at the end, it was Colin Kaepernick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I came back in 14. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think people realize with your accomplishments, you literally have a, it sounds disrespectful, but like a laundry list of quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Names that are.
Football team, Mark Brunell and Jason.
Mark Kane. Brunell. That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Incredible. What was it like? Was there that big of a difference? And again, always being respectful to everybody because everybody's giving it their best. But was it really strange then to get with someone like Tom Brady? And was there a night and day difference, or was there just, it was just different?
It's a night and day difference.
Wow.
And it's from the preparation, the training, the additional training, the film study, the experience, the way he can retain and recall information. It's savant level.
Wow. So
it's no one's close to that. The closest that I came to that, because I've always wanted to play this cerebral game, because I've always played in these really stale West Coast offenses.
Yeah, you did.
Not much opportunity, you know. And so it was, you know, I took a lot of pride in what I was able to accomplish in San Francisco because I never went in motion. I was always lined up on the line of scrimmage, that's always right. On the weak side of the ball, and always, you know, and I had to get after it.
And defenses weren't fooled then. It was like all on Brandon to get open.
It was, you know, and there was over coverage with the safety. You know, this was the time period where when we got in the red zone, teams like Seattle would put a linebacker over me.
Oh, yeah.
And then a cornerback, and then a safety on the side of the field. It was like lockdown, and this was, you know, still in the era where corners could be much more physical within the 5 yard area. And it was just, it was tough. It was tough. I mean, it was good work. Don't get me wrong. I'm not complaining about it. It was good work because it allowed me to entertain and like really show my skills and talent. So I took a lot of pride in what I was able to accomplish. So, you know, I always craved, when I'm watching film and I'm seeing Peyton Manning, you know, doing what they're doing at the line of scrimmage, and seeing Tom, you know, back in 03, 04, 05, seeing what they were doing with the plays, I always wanted to be in one of those offenses. And when I finally got the opportunity to play with Josh McDaniels in Denver, Kyle Orton was that. He was so close that there. Only thing he was missing was just that extra training element that Tom had, that desire to train extra and fully commit. But Kyle was an incredible student of the game. He was incredibly cerebral. What he was better at than Tom was he was a true gunslinger.
Absolutely.
He throw the ball deep. He wanted to throw the ball deep. You know, he said to me on the sideline one time, he was like, man, if I don't throw 3 or 4 interceptions, I don't feel like I'm even trying.
I love it.
Oh yeah, I was like, this is it. And so
this is my guy.
30 times a game. It's like, yes, you know. And he wanted to go deep, and it was just so fun playing with Kyle. That's the edge he had on Thomas. He was just much more of a risk taker with those deep passes. But that was the closest that comparison I can make to Thomas, Kyle Orton.
God, that's a high compliment, Brandon. I'll tell you what, Kyle Orton, it's another case of really talented guy gets in the right system. Because Orton, watching you and Orton play together for those 2 years, I believe. Of course, you guys were on the Bears together too. He reminded me a lot of Kurt Warner in his prime and an older guy, Dan Fouts. Just kind of that gunslinger. Johnny Unitas, you know, guys that would just put the ball in crazy places and let the receiver make the play type stuff. Mm-hmm. Are you guys still close? And did he left Chicago, went to Denver, and then you kind of went through this weird period, and then you actually ended up in Denver. Was that kind of Kyle Orton connection going on there?
It was.
Wow.
Yep. It was.
Okay.
The Broncos in that training camp were having some troubles with health and their wide receivers. They didn't like the depth in the wide receiver position. And I was still in Chicago,
right?
The Bears didn't want to renew my contract, or renegotiate a new contract. I had tore my PCL that year, so I missed
seven games
of that season. Wow. And so, you know, and then the general manager just for some reason just didn't like me. He didn't like me for some reason in that space.
Life.
Yeah. And so, you know, I was in Lake Forest, Illinois, getting ready to go back to school. I was getting ready to, you know, get That's a right. gig at the Big Ten Network. And the Big Ten Network says to me, why don't we just hold off? Because we think you might play again. I'm like, no, I promise you I'm done. They're like, well, let's wait till August. If no one picks you up in August, then we'll bring you in. And so it got to July. And then Kyle Orton calls me, hey, what kind of shape are you in? And I'm like, well, you know, I'm playing basketball Monday, Wednesday, Friday with the hip hop community.
wrong with that.
Club on the south side of Chicago. Before I go to do that, I'm training with my dentist, who's an amateur triathlete. So I'm Olympic lifting and powerlifting. He's a big Russian Jewish man. I mean, he's just insanely muscular, big old trunk and legs and butt.
Yeah.
Powerful dude. So I'm powerlifting with him. I'm hooping with the hip hop community on the south side of Chicago, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I'm rock climbing with my neighbors in Lake Forest. one of the neighbors turned their nanny quarters into a rock climbing puzzle indoors. And so he's got mats on the ground and chalk and these rock climbing puzzles. And so I'm rock climbing Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday. And, you know, these are chefs. So I'm like eating a charcuterie plate and drinking wine and doing these climbing puzzles on the wall. So I'm in this like weird freakish shape. Right. And so I was like, what kind of shape are you in? I'm like, I think I'm in pretty good shape. And so he's like, man, I told Josh to have you come out to work out. And I was like, fine. And so Josh calls me and says, do you remember I ran your pro day at Illinois? And I was like, I don't. He's like, I've always wanted to draft you, but Bill didn't need you. And so now I have the opportunity. He's like, so come out for a workout. I went out for that workout and absolutely lit it up. And they wanted to give me, you know, a contract before I left, but I went back to Illinois and we worked out the deals with the sports agent and I ended up in Denver under a 2-year contract.
Wow, man. I'm sitting here thinking, is his cell phone going off? Raiders on line one. You know, if Josh McDaniels calls you again, what interesting insight in that, man. So McDaniels has a tough time in Denver, moves on to the Rams. You go, I got to ask you a couple of the typical cheesy football questions, but you go to my Rams. I loved having you there. Mm-hmm. I remember you lighting up the Seahawks in that cover three. I remember it like it was 5 minutes ago. And you had a big, I think you had like 11 or 12 catches. It was ridiculous that game. But you go there and then McDaniels moves on and you move on. Kind of looking at your history, we won't get too much into Washington in the interest of time or Chicago, but that season in Denver, I mean, it's still one of the top wide receiver seasons in the history of the National Football League.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, you were just bonkers in that. And it sounds like, maybe I should ask your opinion. Is that just a case of kismet where the stars align? You got Kyle, you got Josh, you've got some offensive pieces around you.
Mm-hmm.
But what were you eating for breakfast in the 2010 season?
I was eating the same thing I always ate. Doing the exact same things. But the stars were aligned. It was, I had a relationship with Kyle from Chicago, where he actually liked me as a person.
So big.
And liked me as a player and wanted to throw the ball to me. And that was something that I didn't have. I hadn't had that since college.
It's crazy.
And so finally that happened in the National Football League. And then I finally had an offensive coordinator who did what they said what they were going to do. Where a lot of coordinators are like, yeah, we're going to get you the ball. And then they just somehow can't figure out how to get me the ball. Josh says, if you play anything like you played in your pro day that I ran, that I saw with my own two eyes, you'll be all pro. That's what he said to me. So when they moved Brandon Marshall out of Denver,
yeah,
they put me right in that role, and
yep,
and I was able to execute on it, you know, more so and in a more productive way, because you know, I didn't need 100 catches, you know, to get to 1,000 yards.
No,
it was a completely explosive style of receiver play from the, you know, the split end position. And and so Josh was dialing up the plays. He got really creative with me. And this is within the same offense that Tom Brady had been running for, you know, the last right. you know, 8 years. And so Kyle's running it. I'm running it. We have these really unique routes in there, double moves, triple moves. And I'm playing in the slot. I'm going in motion. It was just really fun the way Josh drew it up and believed in my talent and yeah. believed that it could help the team. You know, unfortunately, you know, the defense and the special teams weren't, you know, performing up to par. So while that year was amazing, I could not celebrate that year because of the team component of it.
Yeah.
So I was trying to downplay it so much throughout the year, but don't get me wrong, internally amongst my friends, we were having so much fun with that season. That's I was great. Having so much fun. Finally, to get my talent on this stage, on that stage in the NFL and showing what I could do, you know, it's kind of like what we all knew I could be as a wide receiver. I finally had that opportunity. And it was just it's the point to where opportunity and effort meet, you know.
Excellent.
I'd always been an effort player. I'd always gave a damn about what I was doing as a professional and what I was doing with my life as a professional athlete. And I finally had the opportunity with the two pieces of the puzzle that make it all work for a wide receiver. The quarterback liked me, believed in my talent. The offensive quarterback, the coordinator liked me and believed in my talent, and they gave me the opportunity.
God, I got to tell you, Brandon, thanks for sharing that. I feel like the NFL has a long history of really talented guys that never reached their potential just because of what you just said. Just things didn't line up. They had all the talent in the world. And how I know that's so true for you, because as a lifelong Rams fan, I know Josh McDaniels brought you in like a quarter, halfway through the season, and you were our number one wide receiver week one. Yes, like he just knew how to use you.
Yeah,
Rams fans were going like, yes. Like,
I flew into St. Louis on like a Friday night or something, wild. Or on a Monday or Tuesday night it was, and it was late, and I sat with Steve Spagnuolo. And he gave me the rundown. He was like, hey, man, he's like, you know, I don't expect any trouble out of you. I was like, nope. He says, you know, you're going to come here and, you know, we expect you to put up some numbers, move the chains for the team, be a good teammate. You know, we're going to let you and Josh do your thing. And it's kind of like, I was like, all right. I was like, you know,
what I can do. Yeah.
We shook hands and you know, and Steve is another fantastic coach, man, like he's a man's man.
Interesting. Fantastic
human being.
Not popular with Rams fans, I might add, which is, it's nice to hear that, because it's like Rams fans are so down on him, you know, and it's
so passive. He was passive.
Yeah. He's quiet. Led, yeah. And quieter.
Example. And he brought in like incredible speakers and
interesting
message, you know, it was a top down issue. The ownership, that was crappy.
That was an issue.
So he was sitting in this position and just steering the ship and keeping it sturdy. You know, ask Steven Jackson, ask, you know, Long.
Oh, that's Jackson.
And, you know, those players will speak highly of Spagnuolo.
Yeah.
But yeah, I loved being in St. Louis because it was like a mini homecoming.
That's true.
In Kansas City, Missouri. And I spent my amateur athletics through track and field and baseball, traveling all through Missouri. And then University of Illinois being so close to St. Louis, you know, it was just like a mini homecoming between the fans that knew me in the University of Illinois and then my fans from Missouri and just in the Midwest. in the state of Illinois. So I took a lot of pride being in St. Louis. I took a lot of pride wearing the jersey that Torrey Holt and Isaac Bruce wore. I took a lot of pride in being able to show what this offense can do and like entertain in that space, you know, the greatest show on turf. You know, I wanted to entertain the fan base and bring a lot to the community as a player, as a human being, as an individual. And, you know, it was like, it was, I considered that one of the most fun, not one of the most fun, the most fun organization I played with. Why?
Wow.
Because yes, the team was incredibly crappy.
Yeah, they were bad.
Those players were like, it was like the Bad News Bears.
It was brutal.
There were some gems on there. Steven Jackson really revitalized my enthusiasm for the game because he had been on that crappy team for so long, and yet he's still the first one in, last one to leave, still takes care, impeccable care of his body, still speaks positivity in that locker room. I mean, I got in there and it was just like, whoa, like he's still doing it. And I quickly aligned myself with Steven. Per my conversation with Steve Spagnuolo, and Josh, because Josh gave me the same talk when I left Steve Spagnuolo's office. I went right into Josh's office. He gave me the same talk. Like, man, like no acting up. Let's get busy out here.
I was like, they had a lot of characters on that team. Yep. Janoris Jenkins. And it was like,
You know, and Steven saw me in practice through that first week and publicly co-signed for me. And I was like, that's what I needed. And was like, yes. And I was able to, and he let me close to him because he's, you know, he's a Hall of Famer. And
absolutely
superstar player. And superstar players people don't get very close to them, even their own teammates. And Steven brought me close to him. He brought that's me awesome. In. And that was incredibly helpful because I was starting to get to a point in my career where I could have been disenchanted with playing in the NFL. You know, I thought I was already done. In Chicago, then I go to Denver. There's a coaching change, ownership change, quarterback change, and they don't view me very highly in within that organization. And so, you know, it was a fantastic moment where, you know, I requested the trade. The organization granted it to me. My sports agent, being a super agent, David Dunn. With the 3-4 worst teams, be it he had a left tackle, a quarterback, or a coach or a general manager represented within these organizations, and cleared the way for me to make a pathway straight to St. Louis. I mean,
that's it
was
awesome.
A beautiful moment. It was beautiful. And so to be able to request a trade, get it granted, go exactly where I wanted to go, continue with the offense to show that I'm still valuable within the league, within this offense, and, you know, continue to position myself to play, you know, with Tom Brady was, you know, it was an incredible stop for me. And as much as I loved the time there in St. Louis and wanted to be there for that organization, for the state of Missouri, for Illinois, and, you know, just the Midwest and just how much of an affinity I have for that part of America, you know, I wanted to play with Tom Brady.
Oh, yeah. Look, I'm not, there's no lying going on here. Bitter as hell. I was like, we need him to stay with Sam Bradford. Of course, Sam had a tough time career-wise with injuries. But look, nobody who loves the game thinks, why'd Brandon go to the dynasty of the last 12 years and play with Tom? I mean, yeah, we hated it, but I totally respect you for it. And I'm glad you got to do it. You continued the ridiculous highlight reel in New England. Brandon, what do you eat for breakfast? Like it was unreal. I have a zillion other questions on the pros. Maybe one more, and then I'm going over time on my promises to you to keep you tonight. So, was there, before we get into what you're doing now, was there a guy you really hate facing? Was there a DB or a safety or a linebacker, a guy that just really either made it tough or you had respect for or drove you nuts? Or were you just like, just another face?
No, you know, I think that it was the dirtier players, like Man Jones, whether it be, they'd be really good. Yeah. Like really good, but then they take it to the unsportsmanlike area.
Yeah.
You know, like hitting you in the crotch and, you know, grabbing and tugging. You're like looking at the official and they're like, well, the ball's not coming your way. And it's just like, of course it's not going to come my way because this guy's like crushing me over here, you know? And so he was always really tough.
His reputation preceded him.
Harris and Mike McKenzie were just so tough.
Because, with the Packers?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
They were so long and fast and just.
Yeah.
You know, these dudes had like real attitude problems. These dudes were thugged out on the field. And
there was no intellectual stuff going on. It's like, we're here to hurt you.
Man, we're here to jack you up. You know, they look fly out there. They got the green socks on. They got the awesome shoes. These dudes look fly. They got confidence. And it was like, those are always the tough ones because I'm always lining up like, I know how corny my offense is. I don't stand a chance against these dudes. They know exactly what I'm doing. The another tough one was Sean Springs.
Oh, yeah. Sean Springs.
Smart players. Incredibly smart. He knew where, you know, the routes I was running just based on my splits. He's like, yeah, you're going to be inside. And he would line up, you know, shaded inside, like not even hiding it. And here I am, have to run the route right where he's at. Ugh. And it was just difficult. So, yeah, I think those are four players that were incredibly difficult.
Those are big names. Those are big names. I could appreciate that. I also bleed for you playing in uber basic offenses. Like, I think, what would Brandon Lloyd do today in Sean McVay's offense? or even Kyle Shanahan's. I mean, I know, man. It's so luck of timing. Okay. I've kept you a long time. I want to hear what you're doing post-career. That's what this show is all about. Mm-hmm. I know that you're doing great stuff with young people. There was some time you took some heat. You took a year off and you really wanted to explore your musical side. I don't think you're doing that as much anymore. You can correct me if I'm wrong. You were an actor. You did some acting. You really decided, which I admire, like there's no fear here. I'm going to try everything. So you tried it. But now as you're getting older, I guess, now you're really back into that giving to the young people with the CareerWise Colorado.org, where you're helping young guys place themselves in success or at least plan for success in a career, whether it's finances or IT. Tell us about that. How did you get into that? You're one of these interesting guys that's got all these interests, but here you are back with young people.
Yes. Well, and I never left, you know, that was something that, you know, my parents were both public educators and ever since I showed some athletic talent as a youth, my father always told me, well, you need to come in my classrooms and tell your story. You know, even though I went to Blue Springs School and Blue Ribbon Schools in the suburbs of Kansas City, my father always taught in the inner city. And so he was always bringing us back his kids and he was always wanting to be in the inner city so he can show those young black and brown kids that a positive male influence in their life. And so my dad was incredibly successful at reaching young people. So my heart is in the community. It never left. And so I've always been philanthropic throughout my NFL career through partnerships with Blessings in a Backpack, a food insecurity program. That I brought a chapter to my hometown in Blue Springs, Missouri. I've worked with financial literacy in Lowell, Massachusetts, one of the most underperforming communities in America at the time in 2012 when I was with the Patriots. Wow. I've mentored DACA recipients out here in Boulder in my retirement. And so I've worked in another food insecurity program, Big Green. I was on the board for 3 years here in Denver, Colorado, with Gardens. So what I found with CareerWise Colorado is that it combines all those efforts into one. We're a high school apprenticeship model. So we're running an adaptation to the Swiss dual education model where students replace their electives at school with work hours in the workplace.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So, yeah, it's beautiful. So they get school credit. They graduate on time. It's a 2 or 3 year model in high demand, high wage jobs. So like you talked about, IT, financial services, education, and even more technical roles in advanced manufacturing, healthcare. Business operations, human resources. So we have 33 different apprenticeable occupations. So we're shifting the lens from apprenticeship being, you know, a task for the underachievers. And we're actually providing a true pathway for young people who do not see college as the next step in their life for whatever reason.
Changing world. Yeah.
But where are these people go? What do they do? You know, we currently live in an education system where it only works for 80% of the people.
True.
Right? Going to college. You know, we gambled on our on the future of our workforce being people with advanced degrees and engineers. And it's failing us right now. We're leaving a lot of talent by the wayside because our education system doesn't know how to engage them. But with CareerWise, we have found that the education system wants to engage them. They're ready to. And all we are looking for is our business partners to step up and provide the opportunity to interview these young people. And they'll see that they're eager, they're talented, they have unique skill set, they bring diversity into the workplace. And that's not a synonym for race. Because in an age, we're bringing in different abilities, we're bringing in different socioeconomic backgrounds. But the key is they have talent, they have passion, they have desire, they bring a lot to the workplace, and so it's a opportunity for our businesses to now not have to be recipients of the educational product. They're actually the consumer and the producer of the education product by working with these young people in high school, training them and bringing them into the workplace and giving them that social capital that they need to be successful in this life. So they finish a 3-year apprenticeship. They get a nationally recognized certificate through the United States Department of Labor.
They have
a certificate that can compete with any 4-year degree. They have more experience than a young person in a 4-year degree because they've been a part-time employee for 2 years and a full-time employee for the third and final year. And it's just, this is the next evolution to our workforce. And CareerWise, we've been around for 5 years now. We have incredible support from the city level. Mayor Hancock here in Denver has brought on a dozen apprentices. Governor Jared Polis has opened up 30 apprenticeship slots at the state level. We have incredible support from both of our state senators. Senator Hickenlooper is who launched it as the governor 5 years ago. He launched it here, and now he's on 2 Senate subcommittees. And, you know, we don't have to talk to Joe Biden about the importance of apprenticeship. Apprenticeship has lasted the last 3 administrations. The Obama administration discovered apprenticeship as generating more income for young people on average than, you know, going to community college.
Yeah.
And it lasted through the Trump administration and now the Biden administration. So this is bipartisan support. And doesn't matter the size of the organizations from 500 to 10,000. We have enterprise level partners like JP Morgan and Chase in New York. And regional players like Pinnacle Assurance here in Denver, Colorado, who are keeping 30 apprentices on their roster every year. They're maintaining that level. So we're getting incredible traction. We have incredible support. Our founder, Noel Ginsberg, is using all his political capital, his social capital as a successful businessman here in Denver. And it's just admirable work. And I'm incredibly proud to be associated with CareerWise and a partner with CareerWise.
I got to tell you, man, a couple of observations. One, you just nuked the diva wide receiver commentary. You nuked it. Second, I can get cheesy. It kind of goosebumpy there for a minute for me, because hearing your life story and all of the stuff you went through, and there was always this one person that believed in you, Josh McDaniels, my dad, Ron Turner.
Mm-hmm.
And And to see you bring that to fruition in a world right now that is under so much pressure and controversy. Kids don't know if they want to go to college, even though you're not saying don't, you're just saying here's an alternative. All the controversy around student debt and all that, to hear that there's an opportunity to do, I wish I'd had that at that age. That's awesome, man. That is absolutely awesome. How do we support that? How does somebody support CareerWise?
Yes, you can reach out to me on LinkedIn.
Okay.
Visit our website, careerwisecolorado.org. And, you know, we'll reach out to you. You know, we're in five different states right now.
Oh, really?
Yep.
And are you in Oregon?
And we're growing. We're not in Oregon yet.
Okay. Okay. We've got a friend in Oregon now.
Yeah. We don't. Yes.
Okay.
We appreciate and take all inquiries, and we'll seek to expand this model beyond our Colorado borders as the intention of our owner and founder, Noel Ginsberg.
Oh my God. I love it. Look, we need to talk. There's a couple of small companies here, 5 miles from my house. It's this little company called Nike, world headquarters, about 5 miles away, and Intel about 6 miles away. Absolutely love that program, man. CareerWiseColorado.org. Reach out to Brandon on LinkedIn. I'm assuming they could search Brandon Lloyd. Okay.
Yeah.
Other places you can find Brandon, because I have overstayed my welcome with him, is on Twitter at Mr. B. Lloyd. That's two L's, Lloyd. Follow him on Twitter. Any other places we can find you? LinkedIn, Twitter.
Yeah, and LinkedIn, Twitter.
CareerWise.
Yep, and careerwisecolorado.org.
I love it. My friend, I feel horribly selfish. I've kept you over time. I could have talked to you for another hour. We'll have you on again. Thank you so much for buying out the time. Hold tight as we sign off. But folks, we appreciate you listening to Gridiron Icon. We have great, great former football players like Brandon Lloyd on here who are also doing great, great things past their NFL career. And that's what this show is all about. Well, like, subscribe.
Thank you for giving us this platform.
Oh, thank you, Brandon. We need to see the other side of the coin. Our media, as we mentioned in our talk, shows us all the negative, and we don't get near enough of all the great, silent, quiet stuff that's going on with our athletes that they don't need a headline for or a TikTok for or anything else. They're just doing it. So thank you so much, folks. Thank you to Mr. Brandon Lloyd. Hold tight, and we will see you next week. Thanks for joining us on Gridiron Icon.